friends. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out.
Welcome back to My Perfect Romance.
Yay! Woo-hoo!
Today, we are going to be talking about Woman Down by Colleen Hoover. Mm. Where the ink on the page is as red as a crime scene.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Shit.
That did not come from me, boys and girls. That was some nice little
someone pen. Did some fun.
That was some pen work by Miss Lisa, who wrote that line for me.
You're welcome.
Yes, exactly. So I think Corny. That like this is gonna be super awesome because this is kind of, you know, our little
don't blame this on me.
No, I'm saying that we have an author who's getting to read a book by another author about writing. And yeah, so kind of really neat little Colleen Hoover Woman Down moment where I think it was kind of therapy writing for her because her heroine.
Yeah. And we'll totally get into that a lot more. I'm going to break that down. We'll get there.
Women Down by Colleen Hoover was released in January 13th, 2026.
Hold on. Oh, yeah, that's correct.
Oh, okay. Whoa!
I was like, wait a minute. No. My brain's thinking about another thing.
I'll get into it. All right.
Yes.
This is focuses on gaslighting, orchestrated violence, stalking, and invasion of privacy.
So those are red flags, like just for people to be aware of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For sure, because that can be very triggering for a lot of people. Yeah, they've been through those kinds of experiences.
Yes. Yep.
So it's good to be aware of.
Yeah.
Like, yes. If you're so going read this book, into know that. Even this discussion or. Listening to us discuss it or even reading it yourself. These are things that if they are triggering to you, maybe you don't want to read it or listen.
But one thing I do like about Colleen Hoover is that she does bring at real people.
Yes.
You know, like
she doesn't shy away from
she doesn't,
like that.
Which is she's really quite brave in those regards.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Petra Rose, a once beloved author, is living every writer's nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After a movie adaptation of her book, A Terrible Thing, cuts a fan favorite character,
It was like a love trio and they took out the trio.
Yes.
And so the fans were pissed about it.
They are. And she gets a lot of backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't necessarily her fault. She just didn't have enough
confidence.
Yeah, she should support her writing and her characters.
And I love this book. At the end of it, it kind of comes full circle and it really explains the difference between like the writing publishing industry and Hollywood and how the authors don't necessarily have any control over what Hollywood decides to do with their work.
Yeah.
Which seems like terrible.
Yeah.
So she's becomes unable to write because she's afraid of
more backlash.
Yeah.
And writing's always been her joy and a source of positivity in her life. And then now it's such a negative thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, the fear of finishing means that she has to start that process again.
So, but she has to write a book.
And she's running out of money.
They're running out of money. Yeah. She's like, she has to write a book. So, keep her house and all the things that, you know, I think that's an interesting idea. You know, when you have money and you accumulate certain things, a house, a boat, or whatever.
Yeah.
If you lose or if you start making less, it really is impacts you. So, I mean, not that she's
destitute,
or that she's like has a $1 billion home, but she probably has a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And not bringing in that income anymore is really hurting her.
Well,
she's really got to get back into it And she goes back to this lake that she always writes at. It's a little retreat. She gets a cabin that she doesn't always have.
She kind of goes there
every time she writes a book, but she gets the same cabin every time. This time around, she gets a different cabin. But things take a weird turn when she's there. And in the middle of the night, a detective comes to her door because there's been an accident just down the road from
there.
And she instantly sees him and says, this guy
reminds her of
maybe the character she's thinking about is going to be in her book, which is a love. Mm-hmm. She's kind of got this idea of a love triangle.
Yes.
You know, that's going to happen.
Maybe able to
with an affair involved in the love triangle.
That's true. And I don't think we red flagged that one because that can be pretty triggering for a lot of people too. So just be aware of that. So I kind of wanted to get into some fun facts about just Colleen Hoover and why she wrote that, wrote this book. And maybe some of this is my speculation as well. A lot of it, but hey, let me speculate. It's fine. but she initially wrote this as like a limited short release titled Saint in 2020 as part of a charity anthology. Yeah. But then she expanded upon that later on and she, you know, released it a full novel in 2026, just, you know, 6 months ago, whenever this is airing. But what I could not stop, because I will say that I followed Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni from beginning to end. I wasn't very interested in that. So, okay, in 2024, the movie It Ends With Us came out. The book itself was released in 2016. So we're talking 8 years later. It takes a really long time to go from book to a movie adaptation. And the publicity around that, that movie coming out. One of my good friends was like, anything Colleen Hoover writes, I read. It doesn't matter what it is. I love it. So I hadn't read anything of Colleen's at that point. So the movie's coming out and it piqued my interest just simply because I was like, oh, she loves Colleen. I wonder what that movie's all about. And so there was already from the get-go some controversy because of the way that it was being publicized. Colleen Hoover wrote that book because it highlights domestic violence in just a memorandum of her mother and what her mom's experience was with domestic violence and how to break that cycle. She does a really good job of that. But when people are promoting movies, that was kind of brushed under the rug. And there was an incident where somebody was interviewing Blake Lively. They asked her, what kind of resources are there out there? And then Blake kind of brushed it off and said, well, this is a romance movie. This is not about domestic violence, which is not at all what was intended. But what can happen when somebody writes a book is Hollywood takes it over and it can change whatever it is. So that was like around the promotion of the movie. Well, then, you know, I don't know how much longer after the movie came out, I think end of 2024, beginning of 2025, you start to hear this controversy because there's a lawsuit surrounding this where they're claiming that there was a workplace harassment going on around the movie. And so Justin Baldoni and his production company are being sued now. And then there's like this whole backlash back and forth. Smear campaigns left and right. And this just got resolved in May of 2026 after a lot of public scrutiny, and a lot of public opinions. And it was never went to court. A lot of things were dismissed outright because, Blake was considered an independent contractor, not an employee of the Wayfair, production studios. And so a lot of the things and claims were just dismissed. But those claims never went to court to fully get hashed out and, you know, jurors to decide. They resolved it outside of court. And both parties are saying that they came out on top publicly, probably to end this awful smear campaign against each other, to so that their entire livelihoods are destroyed because I can't imagine how ugly this has been for both of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I personally wanted to know, like, what would the court say? Because there's so much us versus or her versus him. And I wanted it to be resolved in a legal, unbiased, fair manner.
I don't think that the legal system's unbiased or fair.
I don't know that that's ever possible just because this became so very public. But in the midst of all that, the whole Colleen Hoover, who wrote this book with the intention of, you know, sharing that domestic violence can end and that you can. She publicly stated something along the lines of being embarrassed about everything that happened around surrounding that.
Yeah.
And she kind of retreated a little bit from the public eye. And it's incredible how many of her books have been adapted into film. So Colleen's no stranger to, you know, this kind of
have your work thing manipulated
happening in her personal life. So I kind of felt like this book was her art, you know, imitating life. And I couldn't help but, as I was reading this author's experience, I wonder if that's how Colleen was feeling.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I couldn't help but speculate that. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but speculate all the things surrounding that Blake and Justin trauma, because gosh, I love that dirt.
Well, I mean,
I do.
It really was traumatic for probably, I mean, even all the everyone who loves Colleen Hoover and her books, Blake Lively, Annie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel really bad for Justin, actually.
I think
who knows? I hope his career isn't ruined.
Well, the fact that he wanted to make a show about domestic violence against women and that he was willing to be the bad guy in it. I mean, like, he produced it and directed. I mean, that shows, I'm sorry, but
Because when you see a man, like, even though he's playing a character and he's evil, like, don't you kind of project that onto who they are as an actual person?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes?
Well, absolutely. I mean, isn't that like, don't actors have a really hard time if they played a role?
A villain
role. And
people,
or even cannot, you know, like Keanu Reeves for a long time, you're like, when he... His like first major role was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And so you're like, oh my God, he's so stupid. You know?
When he's not.
When he's not. Like, yeah. And so
conscientious
you project those things onto it.
Yeah.
But that's also like people do that with anyone. Like as a society, we are more likely to think a good looking person is a good person. And, you know, so we do those things. That
we have to remember they're just plain characters.
Yes. Yeah. Which is something that I really actually love about Colleen Hoover's writing is that she writes flawed women.
Yes, like, she does.
And so, you know, like sometimes I have a hard
unreliable
time.
Narrators.
Unreliable narrators or, you know, women who.
Tough issues.
Yeah, and make
speaking
stupid
of which,
mistakes.
Like, so many of her books have been adapted into films. Mm-hmm. Like coming up in October, you were telling us about Verity.
Yeah.
That's coming out in movie in October and with Anne Hathaway.
Oh,
so I have a hard time sometimes with Colleen Hoover. Sometimes she writes such real characters that are flawed humans that sometimes I don't like her books because I want to bitch slap the women in them.
Yeah.
And so I have to be aware of the fact that Colleen Hoover is writing this book because we're all flawed.
Yes.
And so sometimes I'm like, I have to be like, okay, don't just say how much you want to bitch slap this character the whole time.
Right. Because she's writing realistic characters.
She's writing real people. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing, like, you wouldn't bitch slap your girlfriend if they were making bad choices. And we all have made these bad choices.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's why it's hard to read sometimes because, you know, we all make choices based on emotion. And sometimes those choices aren't the best for us.
I think you're reading this character and they kind of become like a person in your life somewhat. Mm-hmm. And you want to have that conversation with them and you can't. So you're just like, oh, girl.
Yes.
Don't do it. Don't call him.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bad decision.
Yes, you don't want to, but it. You can't talk to them because they're no. just on ink.
And you just have to keep going and keep reading because you just do want to know what happens when she calls him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one thing with Colleen Hoover because, you know, when we're all being that stupid girl making that stupid choice and our friends are wanting to bitch slap us,
yeah,
we sometimes still
there's
do
no mouth
make,
to slap and it gets that.
Yeah, we still do live it through a fantasy viewpoint. And Colleen Hoover actually just, like, she's real. Like, she just says, own it. This is what happens. Just kind of own it.
So here's a question.
Sure.
So many bad decisions are made because of your hormonal feelings. Sexual.
Oxytocin.
Or I should say
real.
Sexual.
No, it's a real thing when you're your fight or fear or fawning, whatever your protective survival system kicks in.
Yeah.
Like the rest of your brain just doesn't work.
Or limbic.
Well, and I think Petra does this. She is making choices based on
emotions
and emotion feeling.
That's important to recognize that as you're talking about it.
She's not necessarily thinking with her upstairs brain. She's thinking with her yoni brain.
Yes, that yoni.
Well,
is
and
very,
she's also
very,
so
very
the premises. The premises. I think we do get to talk a little bit. The premises of this is as our main character. Miss Rose.
Well, let's start with like where does it start?
Yeah, where does it start?
And that's you.
Oh, it's always been me.
It's always you.
So characters meet. They basically meet because she's on this writer's retreat because she's trying to get over her writer's block, and she just has a really heart to heart conversation with one of her girlfriends, and they kind of do a little podcasty thing that they have done.
And it's a live podcast,
and it's a live
podcast. With live questions.
Yes. So she has this conversation with her friend about where she's at with her book, about some of the feelings that she's having about everything that went down with the movie. And so she's starting to open up about it, and she shares that her new book is about a police officer and a love triangle. But then she also talks about her real feelings about, well, maybe I don't know how to do a love triangle. Maybe that's why I was so easily manipulated to let go of the love triangle, because I haven't had experience with those things. So maybe I'm not that good of a writer at writing something I've never experienced.
Right.
And so.
And somebody calls in and specifically asks, like, so. Do you think that in order to be a good writer or a realistic writer, you have to have a lived experience?
Yeah, exactly. And
because you can only write what you know.
But Rose is very self-deprecating. Petra Rose, sorry. Which sounds like a porn star name.
It does.
Petra Rose.
Anyway, and guess what? That does happen quite a bit.
Yeah, it really does. That Rose gets
your yoni Rose.
Yes.
So they meet because, you know, that happens. That conversation happens, you know, 8 o'clock at night. Mm. The next morning at 5 o'clock, she's woken up by a police officer knocking on her door.
Yes.
And lo and behold, this police officer mirrors her main character in the book that she was talking about having writer's block to write.
Yeah.
And so she meets this police officer. He has a wedding ring on. There's chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of like asks him, can I ask, pick your brain?
Yeah, she at least gets that thought in her head, and he leaves it like okay, you can get a hold of me this hell, because I'm going to have to
take your statement
take your
later.
Statement at a
Here's
later
my
point.
Card.
Yeah, so she definitely leaves that option open for her to reach out to him.
Yes, and so then they kind of start this little flirtatious thing where they're going to play these roles. not because, you know, and it won't be a real affair. It won't be these things, but they're going to play the character's roles to help her get through her writer's block.
So it's
kind of,
she's got a mortgage to pay.
Yeah. She's got a mortgage
and
to pay.
He's got a crime to solve.
Yeah. Really, you know, so they make believe that they're not really having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though, because he has a wedding ring on and stuff, and she's, you know, and so she's like, well, I would never do this in my life, but my character would, so I can do this. So they were both displacing responsibility of their actions in order to participate in this fantasy. And they were saying it was for research. So their relationship together has a very strong element of fantasy make-believe.
Yeah. So what gets in their way of, like, them being able to meet their goals?
Well, I mean, so Petra just has been having this writer's block.
Yeah.
And she's suddenly, when she meets Saint, it's like she sits down. She sits down immediately after their first interaction and she starts writing. It opens like the floodgates and she is suddenly able to write. And it's so reinforcing for her that she wants to continue that.
Yeah.
So she calls him.
She's getting her writer's high.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And every time they meet, he kind of plays into her idea of what her character is. Her characters are going through.
Mm-hmm.
So she just keeps calling. Even he's married. Whoa.
Yeah. Her. Meanwhile, he's also, say, well, we can't. I'm married. And well, I've got this child.
Yeah. She sees that he's got a wedding ring on. He takes calls from his wife. And this just plays right into the book she's writing.
Mm-hmm.
And she is obsessed with continuing that interaction.
Yeah, and she keeps telling him how much she loves the fact that their relationship and role playing is helping her write her book. So they keep taking it further and further, and there's a misunderstanding at one point. I guess we're going to call it a misunderstanding, where she had told him about a plot point where her main character in her fictional novel is put in danger and tied up and scared to death and thinks she's going to die.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, I'll give her that.
Yeah.
Because we want to get to, like, what does she have to overcome?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Petra is like, she's suffering from a creative erosion.
Mm-hmm.
So she feels like, you know, a fraud. And she has, so she becomes addicted to the public validation, which makes her unable to distinguish between genuine connection and what will make a good scene for her fans.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why, this is the whole thing, why she keeps reaching out to Saint, even though he's married, and they start.
Because she has a really serious, like, need for a comeback.
Yes. Well, they start a love affair.
And
a really crazy love affair.
I feel like we've kind of gone down, like, really hit down. Like, she has a disastrous podcast interview. She admits she can't write things she can't, hasn't experienced.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up, despite that, a wife being in the mix. Like, they do.
Yeah.
That's what she said she wanted in the podcast, and that's what
she gets, exactly what she asked for.
Yeah. So
almost eerily.
So, like, as I was reading that part, and, like, in her head, she's like, "Oh, this poor guy, like, he's gonna show up for me. Are you sure you can do that?" And he's like, "Well, it's not real. What we're doing isn't real. We can justify this."
Yeah.
And I just want to help you.
He's like,
get through this.
Well, and I remember her saying.
Did you at any point were you like, gosh, that's a blurred line?
Yeah. Like, I think what he even said to her, he said, you know, my choice to be here is my choice. And you know, I've got things going on with my wife, and that's what That's what that is.
Yeah. It takes a minute for him to say that when they decide they're going to start doing that.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know that about him.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. He's like, but when I, by me playing this fantasy with you, it kind of helps, makes me feel like I'm helping someone, like I'm doing a nice thing for someone. And you can tell that he really wants the escapism too.
Yeah. Yes. But it totally feeds into it. It turns dark because there's a scene that she talks to Saint about. Mm-hmm. And she kind of, I don't know if she thinks she wants to relive that, if she wants to live that or not. She's just saying, no, I don't know if she's
talking out loud. She's thinking out loud.
Yeah. Did she tell Saint or was she telling her friend about it in the podcast?
The interesting dynamic here is her best friend is also her first reader.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, even though her husband reads everything she writes, he doesn't read it until it's like in print, ready to go on the bookshelves. Yeah. Uh-huh. So her friend is like her feedback, and she sends everything new to her, and she's pretty critical because her friend's also a writer and a pretty prolific one at that. And so they bounce a lot of ideas off of each other. Mm-hmm. So I
think that she tells her.
It's her friend that she's like, I'm trying to figure out.
She doesn't tell Saint. She tells her friend
mm-hmm.
About a scene where the woman in her book is
being stalked.
Yeah, being stalked, and the stalker comes in and ties her up, and then her boyfriend or the love triangle, the policeman comes in and saves her.
Yes.
And this happens to her one night. Mm-hmm. She wakes up, it's completely dark, and somebody's in the house.
And turned off the power to the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she gets tied up. But
dragged across the floor, like she's terrified for her life.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
And then come to
find out. But at the same time, she's like, who could this, like, is it Saint?
Yeah.
Could it be? Like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, there's no way he would ever do that.
Has he taken this a little too far?
I mean, yeah.
And the strange thing is she doesn't know whether she likes it or not. So there's that piece where... Okay. You know, she's like, I don't like this. I don't like this. But do I? No, I don't.
But so scary. After this terrifying thing, and you can feel the fear.
Oh, yeah. It's so well
written. What is she? He's still there. And she decides to get naked and get in the shower. And I'm like.
Well, to calm down. Like, I think she's just doing that to calm herself down.
Okay, but well, that's probably, if I was really, really upset with a person and they were still there, I don't know. Like, I was like, what the fuck?
She realizes it's Saint that he's done this. And he's like, I'm so sorry. I was just playing the role that I thought you wanted.
But he hadn't apologized to her, I thought, at that point. Like, until after... the shower and the sex, like,
well,
she was
gets
really
in the shower
upset.
With her.
Uh-huh.
And
I was just so bothered.
I think he did apologize to her, but it's kind of like she's just like too far, like I just, and she was
and
going
in
mind, there to
I'm
escape.
Like, it doesn't matter like how like into your role, like she was clearly afraid.
But that's when she'd never
and
had any feelings
you know,
like
I
that.
Just,
he crossed lines.
Well, I feel like through when I was reading this story,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get over how bold Saint always was. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe sometimes the things that he would actually do. I'm like,
yeah,
what a mentally stable human that's not as like,
yeah, he felt deranged.
What, narcissist, or I don't know, what would you call that? Like, I don't know that these things that he's doing are, they are maybe a red flag for somebody who's not what you want.
But here's the thing.
Like a
and
stalker.
Yet,
the problem is that.
Still, they were sexually like.
But here's the thing, you guys. You have to remember, they have this extra protection of we're playing a role.
Right. Yeah. And that's what's
and that's
about
what
this.
So that's what makes this weird is because they both are allowing themselves to do inappropriate, absolutely unacceptable things because they're playing a role.
And the other thing that's like, okay, so they're playing a role and yet she knows, but she doesn't feel that way. Like her body, it doesn't matter that we're not being chased by lions anymore. We still feel stress in the same way that our 2,000 years ago ancestors who were running away from lions felt, right?
Yeah.
And in the brain, we can't process it differently. And the interesting thing about the way our brains work is our fight or flight response, that survival response, is also the same thing that drives the need for reproduction. Mm-hmm. They're both survival things that our brain, like our midbrain, has in place to keep us alive and keep making children.
Make babies.
And so when you're terrified, you're actually really sexually aroused at the same time.
It's trauma bonding.
And so it's easy to blur those lines. So like she's terrified and the next thing you know, they're like having hot and heavy sex. And I'm like, what? Whoa.
Yeah.
But realistically, I guess, you know, that's what our brains do.
You make up sex, like whenever you have intensity spurs intensity.
Oh, that is the best sex there is.
That's the thing is that they have created a fantasy world where unacceptable is acceptable because it's not really us that's doing it. So they have given themselves permission to be extreme. And that was where one of these conflicting things was, there's also, I want to do a good job at this.
Yeah.
He wants to give her all of these experiences. And how well he does that is what's justifying him being able to participate in this inappropriate relationship.
I know. I have to say, I think he is off, like you're mentally, off the whole time, because he is pushing. He's the one who's pushing for
She's like, stop. That's too much.
I mean, and even giving her the ideas. I mean, he's sort of...
It feels like he's kind of writing the book.
He wants to be the muse.
Yes.
Yes.
And he is...
That's what he's getting out of it.
I think it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because a safe person would never take the steps that he takes to get into her life.
But they're not being safe.
No,
they kind of made a decision to not be safe.
That's
together.
That's the push pull of this book. It's a book within a book.
Yeah,
it was like that's actually genius, Colleen. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
But so interestingly enough, Petra eventually discovers that Saint's not even a detective.
Yes.
In fact, his real name was Eric Kingston. And he's a screenwriter.
Yep.
From L.A.,
mm-hmm.
Who happened to see her live stream, and he decided to manipulate her into a real life story that he could use.
Yes, and that's why I keep saying, like, from the beginning, he is pushing this scenario in a way that a normal person wouldn't.
Exactly.
No.
Because he does. She's like, he has this ulterior motive.
Yes.
So it gets us to like what Petra has to deal with through all this whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
So the crisis.
That's me. Sorry, I'm like, yeah. Say it. I'm on the edge. Tell me the crisis is at.
I want you.
Okay. You tell us the crisis. Petra must decide to be inspiration Eric gave her.
We have to start that part over.
Well, let me just look at her for a second. So basically the crisis is, was everything that he did to her acceptable because it produced what she needed to finish the book? And should she be grateful for him because even if his means to the end were scary, freaky, and weird, it was actually gave her everything she needed to accomplish what she wanted to do. So was he really just being more insightful? And was this a beautiful thing? Or is he just still a creepy jerk?
Yeah. So
what would you do? Yes. You're a writer with $0 in the bank and a canceled sign on your forehead. A hot detective shows up who is literal perfection.
Mm-hmm. He's exactly.
He's exactly your, the personification of your book's hero.
Yeah.
He offers to help you research by acting out your darkest fantasies. But at what point do you stop?
Okay, can I just ask you a question before we go to? Have you guys ever fantasy played? Like role played?
Oh, like sexually?
No. Yeah, sexually and stuff like that.
I always thought it would be fun.
Yeah, like
I was like, how about if I'm in a bar and you come up to me and like I don't know each other and you hit on me and we end up going home.
Yeah.
Oh. And we have a one night stand.
Yeah.
Even though we've been doing that for ever.
Yes. But we're different people.
Well, that's actually the best.
I'm wearing a wig.
Okay. So like I love correcting my husband because he's like, you know, sweet and innocent before me. Uh-huh. And so that was like one of my favorite ways to like start correcting him. I'm like, oh, you know, I want to have sex in public. So how can I get him to do that?
With people watching?
No, I don't want to get caught.
Okay, let's just be clear. What fantasy are you watching?
But, you know, try to pick me up and then like I'll have sex with you in the alley.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
People walk by.
And yeah. Like, and so, you're like, you know, where you're not going to get caught, but
you could.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get caught. That's not the time.
Okay.
Well, when Saint mentions he's married.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. When do you say stop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he says he's married. When he watches you sleep through the window.
That's creepy.
Or when you realize intruder who tied you up was actually him helping you with your writer's block. Are you writing the story or is the story writing you?
I think he was writing her. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, writing.
Double entendre.
Oh,
I see what she's doing. He was writing her for sure. A lot of that happened. Gosh, I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. You're experiencing writer's block. You're trying to make your comeback. You want it to be so good and authentic. You've never experienced this for yourself.
There's
and you have an opportunity to actually experience it and to experience it fully.
I would be a sucker for that. I'd be a sucker for that.
At what point do you stop?
Mm-hmm. Once it's gone too far. Like, after you've already, like, sent the ship and
having someone
died.
Watch you through the window, having an affair. I don't think
what bothers me.
I don't think I could do enough research to try to be authentic. I don't know that I would want to have to live out. Is it impossible? And for an author to be a good author, it's impossible to experience everything. But everything is, in some sense, autobiographical. Like any author will tell you that. A lot of authors that we've interviewed, there's a part of that that they have experienced. But what I think connects us as humans or authors to writers is the emotional aspect. And we can all experience those same emotions. You don't have to have a lived experience of an affair to know what it's like. Perhaps. Maybe you interview enough people that you get a feel for what that feel like and what they went through. I don't know. Do you have to experience it firsthand? And that's kind of the question.
I'm going to be a little bit of a devil's advocate here.
As you should.
Okay. So I'm not, the thing that bothered me in this is the affair. Like how flippant they were about making that affair okay really bothered me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like,
and we didn't even get into the depth of this.
Yes, no, there's we're leaving things for you to find out on your own when you read the book.
Because my jaw dropped. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Me too. My
yeah.
Yeah. So way to sneak it by. I did not expect that, Colleen. Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there is there's something to be like, I've never been in war. I've never been a soldier. I've never been in a situation where I had people firing at me. I've never been a refugee. Mm-hmm. I could interview 10 million people about that. And I could get a really good feel for all of it. Right. And I could probably even write it. So let's
talk about, like, we did the Diamond Eye. That's a great example.
Yeah.
The character was in war.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, you know, like, you can do a really good job. And sometimes, like, trauma survivors or whatever, they can tell you the elements. And it's wonderful to have a writer who knows how to hear things and convey those emotions and feelings for them. They become, a writer can become the voice of those people. So I do believe writers can do research and really project it out there. But there is an essence, and I think this is one of Colleen Hoover's strengths because of her own personal experiences.
Okay.
You know, like, she has those elements of her characters are these flawed people because she saw her mom deal with domestic violence.
Right.
She saw these things. And some of that shows through because having, you know, we've all had trauma. Everyone's had trauma.
Yes.
When you know your brand of trauma and you see someone else who's experienced your brand of trauma, there's a shared connection there. So, like, there is something that you can only fully understand when you've done that, because otherwise other people go, what the fuck? Why did you even, how did that even unfold that way? You're like, well, you don't fully understand how you can get to the place where crazy fucked up at the time is the least fucked up.
But I just am thinking of, like, some of my favorite authors of historical fiction, like Kate Quinn.
Did
The Diamond Eye.
Yeah,
and then we had, I love Kristen Hannah.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way on earth they could have ever experienced any of those
things. No, that's so
true. And yet I still felt so engaged and emotionally connected with the main protagonists and their stories.
Absolutely.
So I just think, you don't have to experience something
to write it well.
Because obviously...
That's impossible. No. Yeah, that's true.
And it was really well done.
Like,
so
we don't want to find out there shoot.
But I think that when you are questioning who you are at your core and trying to get that back, I think that maybe you need something to jumpstart you. And so, yeah, I get why Petra could totally justify that. If you're going to ask me personally, I would say hell no to any of that. I would say, nice to meet you, here's my statement, and move on with life.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, so how realistic do you think this book is?
Not very.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine a scenario where that would happen in real life, but it made for a really interesting scenario.
Yeah. I mean, to be important enough to actually have some guy fake being my fantasy person, that's kind of.
I know. I kept thinking, like, how can he be a detective with how much time they're spending together?
Well, I kept saying, when is he working?
I know.
He's always available.
I'm like, he's a really shitty family man. So I would be like, dude.
Yeah.
I don't want to have an affair with a guy who's actually, I mean, like, he's already a dick because he's got his dick in me, but I mean, I don't want to have an affair with a guy who's isn't a good family man.
Right.
I don't know. We're just totally counterintuitive.
I kind of wanted to know, too, like, where did he get the police car and the uniform and stuff?
Well, it was just an unmarked dark vehicle.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Have any of that. And I don't even know. Did he even flash a badge or any of that?
He didn't flash the badge. He had the illegal light.
Because, like, you can get, you know, for impersonating a police officer, isn't that illegal? Like, you can get in serious trouble for that.
Well, I loved how
he was just a detective. For some reason, I was envisioning him with a police car and, like, a police outfit on.
And I think
he did have a police outfit on.
Oh, did he have
one? Yeah, he did.
He has his name on.
Because at one point he comes and changes his clothes into his regular clothes.
Yes.
His uniform on.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Which I was, like, also, like, woof, that's brave. Like, she could prosecute.
I'm going to come and change my clothes.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of Top Gun when he's like, can I shower in your shower after I play volleyball? And she's like, no.
Oh, that's so funny. I forgot about that.
That kind of made me like respect her when he was like, I kind of stink again because I was just playing volleyball and I showed up late at your house. Yeah. So let me shower in your shower on our first date. I'd be like, fuck you, no, too. Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
That's crossing the line. Mm-hmm. And I've got boundaries. Way to go, girl. But Petra didn't, so.
No, she didn't. She was like, help yourself.
I mean, in this, how do you think that this relationship will last?
I'm going to say no.
This is the first. Actually, no. We reviewed another, what was it? Maybe not. And you also
said.
That
was Colleen who ruined it, wasn't it?
And I think. Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. And you, like, because Courtney's a 25 to lifer usually.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was, so this is
rare.
Colleen Hoover doesn't write characters that have lasting relationships.
No, because they're processing their own stuff. Colleen's mm-hmm. books are about processing your own shit to become a better person or yes, to reflect on yourself.
They're on a
journey,
yourself. But they're yeah. definitely not there.
Yeah, they're not. They're not like happily ever after love stories. They're girl.
I think
really
realistically, 3 months.
Oh, if yeah, 3 months.
3 months is what I'm giving them.
And do you think they're going to have a big blow up, or do you think they're just going to fizzle?
Well, how long was the summer? 3 months?
No, I feel like it was a matter of weeks. Yeah, she was at that retreat.
Yeah, so it yeah, so like, maybe like a. It,
as far
it
as like they're going to be
a day
and
3 months.
Yeah.
So how long their relationship's going to last.
Well, they had a fixed relationship.
Because it's all built on, nothing about it's real.
But
yeah.
You know what, though? I mean, I hate to say it. Have you ever had to live in a fantasy for a while to get yourself through a real
Absolutely.
Shitty
time? The fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it. And yeah. So, like, I think this is the thing that I like about Colleen Hoover is mm-hmm. she is real about that. She's like, yeah, we all play in a fantasy at some point to make it through something that's hard for us until we can get to where we need
Absolutely.
To be.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's real and that's really uncomfortable. And that's why half the time I don't want to read her books because I'm like, no, I don't want it to be like that. But guess what? Life is messy and life is like that sometimes. Yeah. And you kind of have to look at it and then you have to say, oh shit, this woman, this author, I mean, dumbass, or like, is what she's doing okay? Is it? And sometimes you have to weigh, she's surviving and trying to figure out a new way to get through because she has to be able to provide and make money and she's super roadblocky. So when it means to the end, alternative techniques, even if they're unhealthy.
Yeah. So how spicy was this romance? I think it was kind of a, cayenne.
Yeah, I was going to say cayenne.
Yeah, there's some sexy scenes, steamy, sexy times.
I think because you're going from like extreme fear to extreme intimacy.
Yeah.
I think that just heightens it a little bit.
Yeah.
Gosh. I mean, that's just the way our brain
Well, hurts. Yeah, because they're not being themselves. So, and not being yourself, you can be another person who is maybe a little more
aggressive.
Capable of doing sexual things that make yourself.
And although we didn't get into it, like she does show a little bit of a contrast.
Oh, yeah.
So it really does show.
Well, I think it's kind of funny how she's like, oh, I'm a girl's girl. I'd never sleep with a married man. Mm-hmm. But my main character in the book doesn't have a problem with it. So I guess I don't have to have a problem with it because I'm just researching. And we all will do that sometimes. We will remove ourselves, we'll like give ourselves an excuse sometimes.
Yeah, we give ourselves permission.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
So I had a favorite line. I don't know if you guys, but my favorite line, and I think it kind of encapsulates what we've been talking about. Petra, she's thinking, I'm still human. I still have depraved fantasies that will never be spoken aloud to another human. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that just brought her humanity. Like, who doesn't have a depraved fantasy that they just we all got a little dark in us.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's real.
That's real.
Yeah.
Mine was, she used to write for the enjoyment of it, but something changed when she became famous. And, you know, it's kind of what shifted in her.
Mm-hmm.
And why this story even happens is because,
yes,
she became so, she questioned herself and her ability to write because mm-hmm. of fame put her on this pedestal. You can do all these things. You're the best writer. But then because of the adaptation of the story she yeah. wrote, movie, it creates a whole different story. And then her readers question the validity of her writing and who she is a person. And
you were under a microscope then yeah. when you reached that little thing. I think mm-hmm. Elizabeth Gilbert gave a really good TED Talk about it. Because her book, Eat, Pray, Love, just did so well that she felt like, I'm never going to be able to live up to that again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The fear surrounding that. Like, it just yeah. puts you in a really difficult spot. She's since written a lot of other great books that I've loved. But yeah, that's definitely a feeling.
She wrote a book after
authors.
Eat, Pray, Love that I thought was way better. Yeah,
Committed.
Way better than Eat, Pray, Love.
I liked it.
It got kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, I agree. Then she wrote a totally different style, like not memoir, that I loved about just women in the city. I can't remember the title, but I loved it.
I think you should just call it Women in the
City. But, you know, I think
I feel like it might be that. No, it's not.
I think it's kind of one of those things where yeah. we let out influences outside dictate how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yes. that's what happens with her in this story.
Yeah. And it's such a human thing. I mean, yeah. who doesn't do that?
Yeah. And when you're
famous. You want to say you're above it, but you're not.
And when you're famous, it only makes it worse.
Here's yeah. the thing that's so funny. We keep saying, oh, be connected. But then also be above everything and don't
yeah.
let other
yeah,
things,
have it both ways.
And don't let other things impact you. It's like,
yeah.
if you're connected, then things are going to impact you. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't get to be aloof and completely connected.
Yeah, that's true. Did you have a favorite line?
I did. Women putting other women down is like telling the world that you are more worried about your competition than your own progress.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
That's a good one, too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I love a woman who will afflict another woman.
Yeah.
It's like, that's somebody that I'm
going to. But here's also the other thing. Do you ever notice, like, in her story, I think it's interesting that, like, she's, like, just been beat down.
Yeah.
And I think that women don't understand that when we're beating each other down, that's when women also are more likely to beat other women down after they've mm-hmm. been beaten down. Because if her being beat down is what gave her the mental capacity to make it okay for her to be an affair partner.
Mm.
Because that's actually, you know, like, oh, I can disregard that because I need to rebuild myself up
so
in this way.
At the same time, she has a friend. And that friend, I thought, was very supportive and uplifting mm-hmm. To her. And she was really trying to do everything she could to, like, help her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She really was. And I think it's so important to have those people in your life because there are going to be people that beat you down.
Yes.
People like to kick people in the... It's called, Schadenfreude? The joy you get out of other people's shame and misery.
It's so sad.
It's a real thing.
I think at this point in we as women mm-hmm. do need to support each other more than ever. And if we're going to get any further in having rights and being thought of as equals to men in certain ways, we mm-hmm. do need to support each other and not support men who don't support women.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that is women supporting women. It's what we need to do.
I think it just comes down to just like love each other and realize that if someone's being messy, regardless of their gender, regardless of, you know, don't cast the first stone. And if even if other people are throwing rocks, maybe don't throw yours.
maybe you can throw love.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do for the podcast. We're trying to throw love and create communities where people enjoy each other.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe be that voice of compassion and empathy and love when someone's being down.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Well, does this matter? Is the story engaging? Do we care about the characters? I mean,
do we like the characters? No, we don't like them.
We don't like the characters.
But we understand them.
But we get them. Yeah. And Colleen, thanks for making us uncomfortable again.
Yes.
God, at least you put some really good hot sex scenes in there, which is nice. Kind of like, oh, this is uncomfortable, but this is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Does it matter? I think it's important. Yeah, I think we kind of hit that really well with your favorite line. Yeah. And it's important to say, like, yeah, let's be supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. Don't kick a person when they're down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it engaging? Yeah. God yeah, damn. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
It was like, it was a meta book. I guess that's the term. It was like a book within a book. And I was like,
book
this is
a book within a book.
Well, my client who recommended this to us, yesterday. She's an avid reader. Uh-huh. She said, she texted me and said, you have to read this for your podcast. She said, I picked it up and didn't put it down the whole time I read. So,
Terry. This was a quick read. It's not like a skinny little book, but
It was like 11 and a half hour listen.
Yeah.
On regular speed, of course. Listen to it like this, and we're talking like this.
Her brain can process that stuff, huh?
Yes.
Wow. ADHD powers, right?
Woo, it is a superpower, girl.
So, what is the recap, Val? What do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I think that this was a great humanistic story. Mm-hmm. And what we learned from this is when you are down in the trenches because people are beating you all up, mm-hmm. you may want to find healthy ways to pull yourself out so you don't revert to fantasy.
Yeah.
Because when you revert to fantasy and you give yourself permission to experiment with things that aren't you because you don't know how to survive in your situation as you, you may make some unhealthy decisions.
Yeah.
So ground yourself in reality, get some girlfriends who are grounded in reality with you, or we'll pull you back to reality when you need it, you know, and that's your core. Let's create strong foundations.
I love it.
That's going to be my takeaway.
Yeah. And I loved, like, this felt like a thriller, a romance, a horror movie, like all wrapped up in one big bow. Two books in one.
Yeah. So if
I don't know how she did it.
This is a Chevy Checker twist. Come on, baby.
It was all of it.
It was a good combination for me because I love, I want to say serial thrillers. Psychological thrillers.
Yeah, you got both.
Less romance. Yeah. It's fun.
And then you turned the corner. You were like, what the hell? That just changed? Like, usually I'm like, oh, you know what? In two chapters, like, this is going to happen. And this is going to happen. And this is going to happen.
Could you predict this one?
This one you couldn't predict, which is unusual.
Yep.
Well, so on that note.
Thanks, Coho.
Yes. Coho. Yo-ho.
If you'd like to reach out to us and tell us about a book, request a book or movie review, to ask us what would you do, or to tell us your life story, you can reach us at www.myperfectromance.com, where you'll find us in all of our socials as well.
Perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then coming up, we're going to be reviewing Girls Like Girls. And it's a new movie. I don't even know. Recording, I don't think it's been released.
I was going to say, oh, crap, I haven't.
So when I was at Wuthering Heights, I got a half hour, 45 minutes worth of commercials and previews.
Yeah.
Because that's how it is when you go to the movies. You can be 45 minutes late. And one of the previews was Girls Like Girls, and it stuck with me, and I cannot wait for this to come out and to talk about it.
Okay.
We're going to be reviewing The Marriage Seed with Lionel Moses, so I'm excited to talk to him. And then we talked about Save Your Marriage, the book, but we're going to meet with a fellow podcaster, author, and just someone who's pretty darn special. Lee Beckham.
He's awesome.
And we're going to debunk The Happily Ever After. And I'm really excited to get his take on that. Mm-hmm. And we'll answer some of your what would you do. So go ahead, while you're here listening to this episode, hit follow, because then you won't miss what's coming up. And then go ahead and rate and review us, because it would really mean the world to us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And until then, keep believing in the perfect version of your own ram mounts. I'm Beth.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this has been My Perfect Romance.
Happy romancing, everybody.
XOXO.